Shema Israel.
And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring into thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our dramatic program today, Eleanor Roosevelt, A Recollection, was written by Virginia Mazur. It is the first in a series of programs entitled Women of Valor, women whose lives exemplify qualities of greatness, and is presented in observance of National Brotherhood Week.
Nothing we learn in this world is ever wasted, and nothing we do stands by itself. This is what you wrote. This is what you believed. You wanted a world where all were equal, where none were left out, none were left behind. So you went out to find out about us, the ordinary people of the earth. You listened to us, and you came to know us as no one person ever had before. Not all of us knew you. You were too plain, too simple, too close to us, maybe. There were some that were amused by you, some you embarrassed, some you angered by the plain truths you spoke. But that didn't matter. You still went on finding out about us, getting to know us. And some of us knew you. And this is how it was with some of us the day you died. Down in West Virginia, in the coal country, everybody had gone to bed but Miss Anna Vladik, who worked in town and liked to keep up with things. She got the news on her battery set. She started to telephone her brother in Charlestown, but changed her mind. She just sat there remembering, rocking and remembering.
I must have been about 10 years old and Ronnie 6. We were the only ones. The baby had died that winter. A weak little thing that didn't even have the strength to cry. Malnutrition, the company doctor said. I didn't know what that meant.
Mama, what did the baby have? What did she die of?
Let me alone, Anna.
I'm hungry, Mama.
What was it, Mama? The doctor called it something.
Mama, I'm hungry.
Let me alone, both of you. Get out of the house.
Come on, Anna. Let's go see my rabbit.
God help us. Help us, I tell you. Help us. It was the Depression. It was bad all over. Bad in the Dust Bowl, bad in the Deep South, bad in Pittsburgh and Scranton, bad even in New York. We didn't know it then. We thought it was only us who were hungry.
Anna, give me a piece of your bread. Just a little piece.
No, you had yours. You ate it.
I want it for my rabbit. Look at him, Anna. He's all bones. He's shivering.
I hate your rabbit. You know what's going to happen to him, don't you? Don't you?
Oh, I was cruel to him, my little brother. I turned my heart to stone. It was because I loved him so much, I think. I couldn't bear to look at him hugging that skinny rabbit. We were sitting on our broken-down front steps, glaring at each other, when she came. There were some other people with her, men in store-bought suits and polished shoes. Only I didn't really see them. I only saw her. I'd never seen a grown-up woman walk like that before, free and striding, the wind blowing her light brown hair. We hated strangers, but she was different. She stayed a long time, asking all kinds of questions. Where was the well? Where was the privy? Where did we sleep? What did we have for breakfast? When she left, I followed her down the path to where her car was, Ronnie tagging after me with his rabbit. All of a sudden, I don't know why, I caught hold of her dress and pointed to my little brother.
My little brother, he's a nut. He thinks we're not going to eat his rabbit, but we are. My father said so.
I won't ever forget the look she gave me. It was as if she looked inside me and saw all my misery and meanness and forgave me. It was about a week later that the letter came. I found it in the mailbox, and it was addressed to Bronnie, the first one he ever got.
Give it to me. It's mine.
You can't read. I'll open it.
No, I want it. Give it to me.
Watch out. You're going to tear it.
Anna, look. Somebody sent me a dollar bill.
It's not a dollar bill, you silly. It's $5.
Who, Anna, who?
Give it to me. Dear Bronislav Valdik.
That's me.
I have not forgotten your rabbit. I told my friend, Mr. William C. Bullitt, about him the other day. And he has given me some money to help keep him alive. I also told my husband about your family and the other minor families who are hungry. He says he will find a way to help you. Do not give up hope. My husband always keeps his promises.
Who is it, Anna? Who?
Sincerely yours, Eleanor Roosevelt.
Your husband was a cripple, so you were legs for him. You went to places he couldn't get to, and you were eyes for him and ears. You went down into a coal mine to see what it was like to be a miner, and they named a town for you down there. Eleanor, West Virginia. It's on the map. You went to the Dust Bowl, into the Cotton Belt, and you poked into the rancid alleys of our capital city, and you talked to starving Americans lined up at soup kitchens in New York. You set it all down in your plain, unvarnished prose for us to read. Only some of us didn't believe you. We didn't want to believe. But enough believed to do something. And gradually, there were fewer people left out in America, fewer people left behind. Then it was the war, and we went from the mines and the farms and the factories to fight. And you followed us there. You followed us to Hawaii, New Zealand, Australia, Fiji, Caledonia, Guadalcanal, and to all those little islands that nobody ever heard of, much less could pronounce. This is how it was with some of us the day you died. Down Cape Codway on Martha's Vineyard, a man named Stephen Spain listened to the late news, then put in a long-distance call to a man named Oscar Pitkin in San Francisco.
I'm sorry, sir, but your party doesn't answer.
Keep trying, will you, operator? He doesn't answer.
I'm going to bed.
You think I'm foolish, don't you?
No, I just don't understand. I don't understand why you can't say it to me. Why you have to call up a man in San Francisco you haven't seen in 15 years.
Oscar was there. That's why.
Well, I'm going up. Good night, Steve.
It was the war. My war. I was 18. The day I graduated from high school, I went down and enlisted. I was going out single-handed and stop Hitler. Only they sent me to an island 1,000 miles away from the war, and the only enemy was the heat and the bugs and the mosquitoes. And my CO. This captain, he didn't like Negroes, he didn't like Catholics, he didn't like Jews, and said so. He thought we were fighting the wrong enemy, maybe.
Take it easy, man, take it easy.
So help me, the next time he starts sounding off like that, I'm going to land him one right on his kisser.
And so help you, he'll land you a court-martial right into the stockade.
Even that might be an improvement. losing my grip. I could feel myself slipping. I'd been on this island for 36 months. We were manning an anti-aircraft station that was supposed to intercept enemy planes flying over to bomb the Panama Canal. But no planes flew over. It would have been a relief. Nothing but seagulls flew our way. And then one day, out of the blue, a plane did come. It circled overhead three or four times like it was trying to find us, then it let down. From a distance, we could see it was civvies getting off.
Hey, and look, a dame. I swear it's a dame.
Maybe it's the USO.
Hey, you guys, guess who? Guess who's here?
Rita.
Kim.
Jane.
I give up.
Eleanor.
You mean Eleanor Holm, the swimmer?
Guess again. Eleanor Roosevelt.
Oh.
Hey, Steve, where are you going?
To the hospital.
Huh? What do you mean?
I've got this fever.
You've had it for weeks. We all got a fever. It doesn't amount to anything. Come on, level with me.
I can't face her. There's a war going on, even if we're not in it. Right now, people are dying. Thousands of them. Millions. I can't listen to a pep talk from a dame who came out here so she could get her name in the paper.
You've got her all wrong.
I'm wasting precious gasoline. Why doesn't she stay home?
Steve. Hey, Steve, wake up.
What do you want?
I came to tell you. She's coming here.
Who's coming?
Mrs. Roosevelt. She told me so at breakfast. I sat next to her.
Oh, come off it.
She ain't in the mess. She said her sons told her to shake the brass if she really wanted to find out what we feel.
Oh. Oh, so she wants to know what we feel, huh? Well, I'll tell her. I'll tell her everything. I'll tell her what I feel about Hitler. I'll tell her what I feel about the black market. I'll tell her what I feel about being stuck here for 3 years.
Look, take it easy, will you? For gosh sakes, take it easy. Hey, Steve, here she comes. This is my buddy, ma'am. Don't pay any attention to what he says. He's been out here for almost 3 years. He's a little bit psycho. Steve, what happened?
I told her.
Huh? Told her what?
Everything.
What did she say?
She listened.
Well, what's she going to do?
She says she's going to call my mother.
Your mother?
On the telephone. She thinks it'll make my mother feel better. She's got a long list of people's mothers to call.
Well, I told you she's...
Oscar, you know what? She really means it. Every word. She really wants to know what we feel.
I told you.
Our trouble is we're so used to phonies, we don't believe it when we see the real thing.
Hello? Oh, yes, operator. Yes, I want to talk to San Francisco. Put him on. Hello? Hello, Oscar? Oscar, this is Steve. Steve Spain. No, I'm not in San Francisco. I'm on Martha's Vineyard. Yeah, it has been a long time. Why I called, I wanted to know if you knew Mrs. Roosevelt is dead. Yeah, that's just the way I feel. I don't know if I ever told you or not. I got transferred right after her visit. But she did call my mother. She called her on the telephone.
Nothing we learn in this world is ever wasted. And nothing we do stands by itself. Your husband died, and you were alone. Alone, but never lonely. There were all the nameless, countless lives your life had touched. This is how it was with some of us the day you died. Up in Harlem, up in that brownstone wilderness, they're listening to the radio.
Here is a late news announcement. Mrs. Anna Eleanor Roosevelt, widow of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, 31st President of the United States, died this evening in her New York City apartment. For weather conditions in New York and vicinity, stay tuned to...
Oh, man. That's somebody we're going to miss.
This is one time you're speaking the truth.
A long time ago. When I was working downtown, I used to see her every morning. walking up 6th Avenue. Free and easy. Just like you and me.
And she could have ridden in a taxi.
She could have ridden in a limousine.
But she chose to walk.
The King and Queen of England, they ride in a golden coach, they say.
She doesn't need a golden coach.
When the King and Queen of England come to visit her, she feeds them hot dogs, same as you.
Rich or poor, they're all the same to her.
Those club ladies? They don't know. They don't want Marian Anderson to sing. She got out of the club.
Then she turned around and invited Marian to sing for her at the White House.
Black or white, they're all the same to her.
If everybody had her feelings, it would be a better place.
Y'all got a long way to go.
I don't know if we're going to get there without her.
You belong to us in a way no woman in public life ever had before. Some might smile at your gawky height, your plain tailored clothes, your high-pitched, earnest voice. Some might say you talked too much, you were confused, misguided, you ought to stay at home. But all the same, you were ours. And after the war, when the boundaries of the earth began to shrink, you began to belong to the world as well as to us. You became a delegate to the United Nations and helped breathe life into it. Because people were never numbers or statistics to you, you went among them to see for yourself. You went to India, to Pakistan, to Jordan, to Israel, to Japan, to Indonesia, to Russia. The heads of states wined and dined you. An Arab sheik gave you a silver dagger and asked you to be his 40th wife. In Russia, you argued politely but firmly with Mr. Khrushchev about anti-Semitism there. But always it was the people, the plain people, who caught your interest. The young, the weak, the poor, the striving, the oppressed. We must show by our behavior, you wrote, that we believe in equality and justice, and that our religion teaches faith and love and charity to all men. And so the day you died, we wept for you, not only in New York and Washington and all our little whistle stops, but in Tanganyika and Moscow and Karachi and Tel Aviv, and in places like Beersheba, the Bible city where Abraham dug his wells.
It is autumn, the month of November. But here in Beersheba, where the desert begins, the morning sun is hot on my neck. In a little while, I will go inside and tell the children at the day nursery the news.
Why have you been crying, Shoshona?
Why are you sad?
We have lost a friend. Mrs. Roosevelt is dead. She died last night while we were sleeping.
Why do you say she is our friend?
I don't know, Mrs. Roosevelt.
Oh, but she knew you. She knew us all.
That is what I shall say to the children. I shall tell them. From the beginning, she was a friend to Israel, but always a special friend to our children. She made 4 trips to this country, and youth Aliyah became her great love. To save the children, to heal them, to help them grow straight and strong. This was our greatest achievement, she thought. She became a world patron of Youth Aliyah. She gave us money. She made speeches for us. She gave us her time, her strength. She gave us her heart. This is what I shall tell the children. But there is a memory, a private one, I shall keep for myself. It is 10 years ago.
Shoshona. I am 12 years old. I have been lifted out of Yemen by plane because as Jews our lives were in danger. I have been lifted out on the wings of the eagle, as the Bible said. People here are kind to me, but I am a stranger in a strange land. In Yemen I have lied. I have begged. I have stolen. To live I have done things no child should ever do. Here in this bright and bustling country, I am ashamed. I hang my head. I refuse to speak. They put me in a school for disturbed children. And one day at the school they tell me.
Wash your face, Shoshana. Comb your hair. We're going to have a visitor.
a great lady. She is a queen, Shoshana. The queen of America.
All the other children picked daisies and poppies and cornflowers to give to the queen. But I hide in the cow barn. I am ashamed. They come to find me.
Shoshana, you must not hide. There's nothing to be afraid of. Our visitor is your friend.
How could the Queen of America be my friend? Dumbly, I allow myself to be led into the light. My hair is brushed, my face washed. On an impulse, I take from my box a little bracelet of beaten silver. It was made in my village in Yemen. It was my mother's, and she gave it to me when I left her. Now my mother is dying of tuberculosis in Yemen. She will never come. The bracelet is too large, but I put it on my arm and go out to meet the Queen of America. Sunlight is strong in Beersheba, and I am unhappy. I shut my eyes against the sun. I shut them to try to blink away my tears. When I open them, a tall, plain woman with a kind face standing in front of me. She smiles at me and reaches out and takes my hand. She touches my bracelet, running her hand over the design. In the world that I have come from, strong take from the weak. Whatever they want, they take. If this woman wants my bracelet, I must give it to her. I slip it off and hand it to her, my face like a stone.
No, Shoshana, no. She says you must keep your bracelet. You must be proud of what your people have created. She says it is very beautiful. And so are you.
She passed on down the line, greeting the children, smiling at them, asking questions. The big, plain woman with a kind face. I am puzzled. Where is the queen? When is the Queen of America coming?
Shoshana, you goose! Don't you know? She is the queen. The Queen of America. In a little while, I shall go inside and tell the children at the nursery here the news. I shall tell them how this day nursery was named for her, the Eleanor Roosevelt Daycare Center of Beersheba. I shall tell them that I am proud to be a teacher here and that they must be proud too. Later, all over Israel, there will be speeches, memorial services. But now I will hold my own in private. A woman of valor, her price is far above rubies. She stretches out her hands to the needy. Many daughters have done valiantly, but she exceedeth them all. Give her of the fruits of her hands, and let her works praise her in the gates.
Nothing we learn is ever wasted. Nothing we do stands by itself. This is what you wrote. This is what you believed. You went out to find out about us, and in finding out about us, you made a bridge between the plain people of the earth. You made a bridge between a frightened little boy in the West Virginia coal country and a frightened little girl in Beersheba in the state of Israel. I know. I was the boy whose rabbit you saved.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now, we take great pleasure in presenting Mr. Hyman Bookbinder on leave from his post in Washington, D.C., as Special Assistant to the United States Secretary of Commerce to serve as Director of the Eleanor Roosevelt Foundation. Mr. Bookbinder.
A letter to the Foundation the other day tells much about Eleanor Roosevelt's impact on the American people. A White House aide in the Roosevelt administration told of the letter he had received one day for the President. I have an urgent problem, Mr. President, that I hope you can do something about, a woman wrote. If you cannot do anything about it, please send my letter along to Mrs. Roosevelt. I'm sure she can. Soon after the death of Mrs. Roosevelt on November 7th, Adlai Stevenson, in just a few words, summed up the tribute that all the world was trying to pay to Mrs. Roosevelt. She would rather light a candle than curse the darkness, Mr. Stevenson said, and her glow has warmed the world. She would rather light a candle than curse the darkness. How appropriate, then, for the moving tribute you have just heard to be given on this program, The Eternal Light. For there can be no more appropriate memorial to Mrs. Roosevelt than a universal effort to keep the candle burning, to provide an eternal light on the world's ills, on the world's problems, on the world's promises. To help keep the light burning, the President of the United States asked Adlai Stevenson to head a committee of outstanding Americans to create a fitting memorial to that great lady. The Eleanor Roosevelt Foundation is the result. The Foundation Committee has dedicated itself to continuing the humanitarian endeavors of Eleanor Roosevelt in five broad areas of her tireless efforts. One, to strengthen the United Nations in the quest for man's universal hope for a just peace. Two, to protect and extend human rights and equal opportunity for all people everywhere. Three, to wage a ceaseless and worldwide attack against sickness and disease. Four, to promote maximum growth and development for every individual. And five, to assure the worth and dignity of each human being. This is indeed a formidable assignment for the Foundation. But what else would be appropriate for Eleanor Roosevelt? For she always took on formidable assignments. Pursuit of peace, human dignity for every soul on earth, finding cures for incurable diseases, enriching the lives of people everywhere.
Thank you, Mr. Bookbinder. Eternal Light drama today, Eleanor Roosevelt, a recollection, was written by Virginia Mazur. It was the first in a series of programs entitled Women of Valor and was presented in observance of National Brotherhood Week. Cantor Robert H. Siegel sang the liturgical introduction. Featured in the cast were Bryna Rayburn, Susan Towers, Alan Howard, Peter Fernandez, Rita Lloyd, Larry Robinson, Elwood Smith, Gloria Foster, Clifford Carpenter, and Bathsheba Garnett. The narrator was Mason Adams. Be with us next week when the Eternal Light presents From the Land of Goshen, a story of Miriam, the sister of Moses, by Harriet Kopp. This is Bill McCord. Our program was directed by Daniel Sutter. Portions of this program were pre-recorded. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is the NBC Radio Network.